Good morning, and welcome to A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith, where significance blooms here on Survival Radio Network. The SRN biz of the week is Survival Radio Network is expanding in 2015. We're looking to add a powerful fitness show on the network. If you're a fitness expert and you'd like to expand your reach to thousands by hosting your own online radio show on the fastest-growing network out, contact me at MoniqueAJSmith@SeasonEmpowerment.info. No radio experience needed. SRN has its own in-house training systems. SRN, we do radio. Eligibility coach promotion for the week. I am so glad to announce the book, The Athletic Scholarship Eligibility Coach, is now available on Kindle. The Eligibility Coach book is a guide for the eligibility certification game and is only $7.99 on Kindle. So you may purchase that by also going to SRN Book Club at www.survivalradionetwork.us and click on the SRN Book Club. As we enter the new year, it's a good time to take an assessment of what season we are in. I believe in order to elevate in your role as a leader, it's important to indulge in self-reflection or self-evaluation. This month, we are introducing the growth segment brought to you by afaithconnection.org, where connecting you with you is success, is up to you. The founder, Andrea Harris, is the author of Seasons of Life. It's a great guide to spark your reflecting time. It's an e-book and it's only $4.99 and can be purchased here on SRN Book Club. Again, that's survivalnetwork.us and click on the book club. Happy New Year. I'm glad to announce last week we had our very first live remote at the D.C. Armory doing last week's championships of the National Tire and Iron Conference and Classic. 42 teams, 4 courts, and 3 days. If you like to host a chat in the garden at your event or your campus in front of your sports management class, please let me know at MoniqueAJSmith@SeasonEmpowerment.info. Again, that's MoniqueAJSmith@SeasonEmpowerment.info. And we will have a significant time. So if you're just tuning in, I'm your host, Monique A.J. Smith, and this is A Chat in the Garden where significance blooms. Today we're going to meet my mentor, second only to Jeanette A. Lee, the first female athletic director of CIAA and the woman who hired me in 1990. This person has the most impact on my career, from recommending me to my very first NCAA committee to now me hosting A Chat in the Garden. None other than Alfreda Goff, the Senior Associate Commissioner and Chief of Staff of the Horizon League. Welcome to the Garden, Alfreda.
Good morning, Monique, and thank you for having me.
You hear your cheers?
Yes.
Alfreda, it is such a delight, and I am going to try to keep my composure because I am so excited for you to join me this morning.
Well, really, it is my pleasure because you truly have bloomed into a beautiful flower over the many years that I have known you. So it is indeed my honor and privilege to be your guest today.
Thank you so very much. Now, Alfreda, let's take our listeners down your wonderful career journey to your current position at the Horizon League.
Well, believe it or not, Monique, this was not the career path that I chose for myself. Coming out of college, I wanted to be a high school teacher. I taught in the Pittsburgh School District, in the East Allegheny School Districts in Western Pennsylvania. And my game plan was to teach for 25 years, retire after 25 years, and then go into a second career in social work. So as you can see, that did not work out for me, but obviously God had a different plan for me and a different route for me. So I accidentally got into college athletics because I was a mentor and a helper for a young man who was an All-American in our high school football and basketball program. And we only had two counselors for 1,400 students at that time. Mm. And so they asked me if I would personally mentor this young man and help him through the recruiting process for college athletics. So that was my first taste of college athletics, the recruiting process. The young man ended up going to the University of Pittsburgh, and the coach at the time for football was Johnny Majors. His top assistant was Jackie Sherrill. And they both indicated to me that there was probably an opportunity for me in college athletics, but I didn't take them serious because I thought it was just their way of sort of stroking me, as we used to say.
Mm-hmm.
But they were true to their word. The University of Pittsburgh had just started their women's program and had started a track program for women along with basketball, swimming, and gymnastics, and they were looking for an assistant coach. And so I got a call from the athletics director at that time, Sandy Bullman, asking me would I be interested. And I said to her, well, I'm really pretty content teaching school and coaching, had a very successful high school program because that too had just been started from the roots, ground up, and we were able to get kids at the state championship. So I was in a pretty good place, I felt, with coaching. But as I said, you know, my mom always said, never turn an opportunity down, so at least go and talk to the lady. And mm-hmm. I did, and that was the start of my career in college athletics in 1975.
I was going to ask you what year that was, 1975.
So, yes, sister girl, I am pushing 40 years in the business of college athletics.
Wow. And what a wonderful impact you have made in 40 years, I tell you.
Thank you.
So, let's continue. So now
okay.
You at the University of Pittsburgh.
University of Pittsburgh, starting out as an assistant track coach. And back in those days, we weren't under NCAA rules for women's college athletics. We were under an organization called AIAW and had some different recruiting and compliance rules. I was able to coach at the collegiate level and also coach at the college level. Talk about a great recruiting advantage.
Wow.
Being a coach at the high school and the college level at that time. So I was able to recruit kids from Western Pennsylvania to come to the University of Pittsburgh because I knew them personally because we competed with them as high school student athletes. And so
mm-hmm.
that was awesome for me, and I became the head coach after 1 year because the women's head coach decided she didn't want to be a head coach, so they just bumped me up, and I hired a couple assistant coaches, and our program really took off. We became one of the top three programs in the eastern part of the country,
mm-hmm.
Behind Penn State and Villanova. And we won many a championships, had several national All-Americans, and just had a good, complete program because we truly recruited our kids first for academics and second for athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to say that every student-athlete who I coached at the collegiate level who lasted her entire career as a student athlete, got her degree. I did not have anyone not graduate from the University of Pittsburgh. And even those who decided maybe track wasn't for them,
mm-hmm.
after a couple of years, they too graduated. So I'm really pleased. So my APR for track back then, if we'd have had it, would have been 1.0000 because our kids really did embellish what was why they were there, which was to get an education first.
Outstanding.
And then I stayed in the coaching ranks, Monique, for about 7 years, and I have a son and was a single mom. My husband had died a couple years prior to me going to Pittsburgh, and he said to me, Mom, I really miss you not being at my events. He was a strong student academically. He was in the band. He was an athlete. And I was missing all of those events. I had family members going, but it wasn't the same. And so I said to him, I understand. I went to my boss and told her I needed to resign at the end of the season, told her why. And she looked at me and she said, if I offered you a full-time administrative position, would you stay? I don't want to lose you. And I went home and talked to my son Anton about it. And as most kids, you know, he was pretty engulfed in the program, got a chance to come to a lot of athletic events. He was around great athletes like Tony Dorsett, Dan Marino, Mark May, you know, Lawrence Taylor, those guys as a kid. And so he enjoyed that part, and he got to see great Big East basketball. So he saw a Patrick Ewing play and a Chris Mullins play and the great coaches from the Big East at that time. So, of course, he was excited that he could have the best of both worlds. He could still go to all the events, and Mom would still be home to go to his events. So it was a win-win for him. So he was very supportive of me moving over to administration, and it was a great decision. It was a tough decision because I truly loved coaching. Mm-hmm. I loved developing young women to be the best they could be in the sport of track and field. Stayed at Pitt for a total of 12 years, and my long-term career goal, once I became an administrator, was to be an athletics director. And a lot of people back in the 70s and early 80s just weren't receptive to women being athletics directors, because now our separate departments, men and women, now became one. So the women who were the athletics directors over women's sports now became the senior associates, the associate or the assistant AD. So we lost a lot of senior level leadership in the leadership seat when we combined both men and women's programs under one umbrella. But there were some positives for that, because it meant more resources for women. It also provided more opportunities for women. We weren't just totally closed out. And especially for minority women, it opened the doors for us to rise up out of the ashes. Because when I was first named an administrator at the University of Pittsburgh, you could count on one hand the number of minority women that were in leadership administrative roles at Division I.
Wow.
And as over 40 years, we now see women as ADs, we now see women as commissioners, we now see women as presidents of universities. Women have come a long way, not for athletics, but just for the fact that Title IX opened doors and opportunities for us. And athletics was really the beacon, the light that sort of shone the brightest to give women that opportunity. I left Pitt to take an opportunity that would advance my administrative career and went to Virginia Commonwealth and was their senior associate AD for all sports except for men, basketball, and baseball. So I got oversight to actually run sort of for my AD, the athletic department, because he was busy making fundraising opportunities, because VCU in 1987 is not the VCU that we know today. We played in a little gym, Franklin Street Gym. We played at the Coliseum. We didn't have a lot of dorms on our campus. We didn't have a lot of diversity on our campus. So VCU has grown, and I'm happy to say that I was a small part of that growth athletically. For 7 years, I served as the associate AD to Dick Sander, who was our athletics director, and he really just gave me so many opportunities to grow as an administrator. There wasn't anything that I didn't want to do that he didn't allow me to do. And if I can share anything, if you want to grow, you have to let people know that you want to grow. People aren't mind readers. I could have sat in my office and just did what he wanted me to do, but I told him, I would like to do this, and he goes, great, we'll give you that opportunity. I want to be this. So I wore several hats for Dick. I was the, not only the senior woman administrator for athletic department, I was also the compliance officer for athletics. I was also the liaison on campus for athletics and administration for admissions, registrar, financial aid. So I got to meet people on campus and develop my resume as I learned many, many things. And then, you know, I always say God puts you in the right place at the right time. Virginia State was looking for an athletics director. I was not looking to leave VCU at the time. I wanted to spend a couple more years. But the president at VCU, President Trani, was good friends with President Moore, the president of Virginia State, and they were talking. And it was their connection that got me to Virginia State University. President Moore recruited me from President Trani. And I accepted the opportunity, which also gave me an opportunity to meet women like Monique and other women in leadership roles at the CIAA conference office, as well as the member institutions. And I stayed there for 4 years. And after 4 years, I felt I needed a change. Spending almost 20-some years on a campus, you sort of get worn out. Mm-hmm. Monique, you're a former on-campus person. You know you're like the doctor. You're on call 24/7,
yeah.
12 months of the year. So I was getting worn down, needed a change. My son had completed his undergrad. He was working on his master's degree. So he was sort of moving forward with his life. And I decided to step away from Virginia State University and received a phone call from the commissioner of, it was then the Midwest Collegiate Conference, the MCC,
mm-hmm.
and his name was John LaCrone, and he's still the sitting commissioner, and we have since changed our name to the Horizon League. And it was probably the best phone call I ever entertained. Mm-hmm. I did not know him personally. He knew of me. He knew people who knew me and spoke very highly of me. So that was a lesson for me that you never close any doors.
Mm-hmm.
You always be your best.
Mm-hmm.
Networking was very, very important because if I had not networked with the right people who knew John LaCrone, I probably would not be sitting in the current position or in the office that I'm sitting in right now. So that sort of gets me to from when I started as an assistant coach in 1975 to my current position at the Horizon League in 2015.
Wow. That was a flash. We just flew right through that. But that's a career. That is something to hold your head up on. And it's funny because I know your story, but every time I hear it, I learned something new, and I just kind of go like, wow, you know? Now, one thing that I do remember that talks about the growth is that I was at St. Paul's, and you were at VCU, and you were at the beginning of the growth of the Women's Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
You hosted...
Yes.
I think that was the first time I ever saw the Final Four on television.
Yeah. Yeah. In 1994, Richmond, the city, and VCU, we co-hosted the 1994 Women's Final Four. And it was the second consecutive year because the year before we had been in Atlanta, and it was the second consecutive year for a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
The Women's Final Four. I can remember the first few years that the NCAA held the Women's Final Four, you couldn't give tickets away to the event.
Right.
Now today, you can't get a ticket, literally. So it was a great opportunity for me, and it did sort of put me on a national stage because we did such a great job, and I'm not taking all the credit for it because the staff at VCU, the committee, the women's basketball committee that I was on, and the city of Richmond truly embraced the event. And I was very proud. I was like a proud mama when we opened the doors and saw every seat was full, and we had a great, great championship game. And I don't know if any of the listeners out there even remember it, but Charlotte Smith,
yes,
from the University of North Carolina hit a buzzer beater, a three-point basket, literally left the ball go as the buzzer was sounding. It went in, and they beat Louisiana Tech by a point.
And as you say that, I got goose pimples on my arms. I just remember that. And I was like, oh, that's right in my backyard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thrilled. I was thrilled. Now, and I think, isn't Charlotte the head coach of Elon now?
She is. She played a little bit in the now-defunct USFA Basketball Association, and she was assistant coach for a while at the University of Virginia. And I'm very happy to see her as the head coach.
Now, folks that are listening, if you want to know somebody, all you got to do is ask Alfreda because she knows everybody. You think I know everybody? Alfreda knows everybody. And she will introduce you to everybody. Believe me, I've had that experience. Walking, hey, stop right here. I want you to meet. So when I say a mentor slash sponsor, you do not mind assisting others. I have so many friends that can say, oh, yeah, Alfreda helped me with that experience or that job. And so, as I said before, it's because of you I got my first NCA committee. And you also, I was always a SID, one that writes the stories, and you put me out there with a mic in my hand. And so thus, you gave me the confidence to be able to do this show. And I just want to say thank you again for your love and support all these years.
Oh, you are more than welcome, because I'm like the proud mother when I look at my CIAA ladies from when I was at Virginia State, and where all of you young ladies have just bloomed and blossomed and where you're at with your careers today. It makes me proud. You know, I when I see you guys at a convention or a meeting and we all get together, and I'm smiling for a reason, because you guys have done what I was hoping you'd do and believed in yourselves and just rose up the ladder, rung by one. You did it the right way.
Well, thank you. And, you know, the thing about athletics, and even on a corporate level, you know, you do have, because I did think I was going to be in television. I did. I interned at BET. I interned at a local CBS affiliate here. But I have to be quite honest with you. There is not that reach back and let me assist you, because the competition, because of the media of how that works, and you being one sitting at the table behind or in front of the camera. And so that is why I chose athletics, because I felt the support even from other SIDs who were males, because, again, I was the only female SID for a very long time. But it is that and it's odd, because you think because we're in athletics we're so competitive, but we're not. We see the joy, because athletics is about education. It is about helping others grow and to do well. And so when you look at that, and you can look to a person that's been sitting beside you, and then you see them soaring above, you can cheer. That's what athletics is about. So
exactly. And it just does my heart good, because, as I said earlier, when I became an administrator, you could count on one hand the number of minority administrators in athletics in Division I. But I think we've all gotten to where we've gotten, at least I hope we have, by reaching back. Because you know what my motto is, each one reach one. And when you do that, you're pulling someone forward, and they're pulling someone forward, and the chain just keeps going and growing. And that's why we have the women that we have, like the Candy Youngs, who I've known since she was a high school student athlete. And to this day, I remind her, I tried to get her to come to Pitt, and she chose to go somewhere else. But I don't hold that against her. But, you know, young women like Candy, when I can sit back and say, I remember when she was competing at Beaver Falls High School, and
wow,
she was a phenom, you know. And I can remember when I met Tony Morgan at the time, and she was shy and didn't want to be in the forefront and was comfortable just doing the little work. And you sort of gave me a little pushback, young lady.
Yes,
if you
I
remember.
Did. Yes, I did.
Oh, I'm not ready. I can't do that. But I kept saying, you'll never be ready if you don't step out. And I promised you that I would not let you fail.
You did.
That if I was going to get you out there, I would be there for support. And hopefully I've been able to do that for you through the years.
Okay, Frieda, you got to stop because I'm getting teared out. Okay, so let me get
all right. Okay.
Get back to mode. Okay, all right. So speaking of CIAA, we have the volleyball coach for Elizabeth City State, Tiffany Tucker, and she forwarded a similar question that I was going to ask, but I'm going to ask her question. What advice to coaches who desire to transition to a conference office or a senior-level administration?
If you are currently a coach, whether it's a head coach or an assistant coach, I would highly recommend that at your current situation, you go in and talk either to your supervisor or to your athletics director or the senior woman administrator and say, I am really interested in administration, and I see that being part of my career down the line. And I want to start preparing for it while I'm here with you guys. What are some of the areas that I can help in? I can recommend event management. And I'm sure Monique is nodding her head because when, especially at HBCUs, we're not overloaded with a lot of administrators and staff. So if you can help other sports outside of volleyball for event management, that's one way you can learn to be an administrator. A second is to get involved in committee work, either on the conference level, your campus level, and your department level. That's where you learn a lot of things from other people. You learn what to do and what not to do. So I would recommend that. Volunteer in your community. One of the things that when they're looking for administrators and they're looking at resumes, they want to see what you've done other than your job. Mm-hmm. So being involved in the community is key. Giving back, that's what they're looking for, giving back. Anyone who wants to become an athletics director, I highly recommend that they get involved with their fundraiser or their development person on their campus to learn the ins and outs of managing and developing budgets and raising money. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is you have to raise more and more money. They're cutting back on budgets at the state level, at the federal level, and also probably in just in your communities. So you have to raise money because costs for athletics are not going down. They're only mm-hmm. going up. So those are the things that I recommend to anyone, male or female, who's interested in becoming an administrator and also wanting to maybe become an administrator and be a leader as an AD, because I know a lot of people like that big chair. And I say, be careful what you ask for, because sometimes you get in that big chair and you're like, ooh, I wasn't prepared, or it's not what I thought it was. But there's going to be some no's. There'll be a lot more no's and a lot less yeses when you first start out. But don't give up. You know, don't follow your dream, stay with it, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
Now, one thing I wanted to add to that, sometimes because you are in that seat, you really don't have time to say, hey, look, can you help me with this? So mm-hmm. if you see an area that you know that you can help, it's like bringing the solution. You know,
there you
I would
go.
Like to help with this.
Exactly.
And so that would also be a great way. Because, again, you can see something. Instead of pointing out the problem, hey, look, I'd like to help mm-hmm. you with this. And so,
exactly. You're absolutely right. As an administrator in many, many roles, I've always appreciated the individual who came to me and said, Frieda, I know we're working on this project, and here's what I have that we can do, and I've got it covered. Boom. And I'd be like,
right.
Thank you. Appreciate that. You know, believe me, no one's going to turn down help.
No.
Good help, especially.
Well, let's talk about the transition from a campus to a conference. Because you talked about money, and the raising of mm-hmm. money on a conference level is a little bit different from a department. What kind of adjustments would you have to say that you would need when it relates? There's some good adjustments. The time constraints mm-hmm. are much better, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you are a person that get that fuel from students, you have to figure out another way. So what are your advice
right.
about that?
Yeah. If you are looking for a more stable lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
conference office is probably the route to go. We're not 9 to 5, but we pretty much close to that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we run championships, we go to meetings, we go on campuses. But you control that. Those are set times. I'm not getting calls from parents.
Right.
I'm not getting calls from presidents. I'm not getting calls from security. Those kind of things that you encounter when you're on a campus. Now, what I did miss was the daily interaction with my student athletes. You do not get that at a conference level. You get that in bits and pieces throughout the year through championships and through the SAC committee that you have, and also going on campuses for events during the regular seasons. But you don't have that day-to-day, and I really, really missed that for the first year because I had spent 20-plus years interacting with student-athletes every day. So to just sort of go cold turkey was a little more difficult. Now, but here's the one thing that you also have. You, like for us, we have 9-member institutions. Mm-hmm. I now have 9 families. So I now have 2,000 athletes that I can interact with. I have, you know, coaches from every institution. So that has expanded my network and my opportunity to develop relationships and give back to more people. Financially, we're not a BCS conference, so what we pay sometimes is less than what someone can earn on a campus, but it just depends upon what you want, because our young people have made a decision to be a member of our staff for a reason. They didn't want to be on a campus. They wanted to have a life. They wanted to be able to raise their children, and, you know, for different reasons. So it all depends on where you want to go in your career. I highly recommend. I did it at the end of my career, and I thought that was great. But I'm telling our young people, if you can get a campus experience after you've been at a conference office, I think you're better prepared to go onto a campus than you are to come from a campus to a conference office.
That's unique. That's unique. Mm-hmm. For me, it was difficult, and I said to myself, I had to really psych myself up and say, I can do more for more people from a conference office standpoint. And I do feel I did. And I would just soak in my interns, like, you know, well, tell me more. What's going on in your life? You know, because I was like, I just need that. That student-athlete feel. Now, we do have a person on the line who has a comment. Tanya?
Alfreda, and I am one of your babies. This is Tanya.
That's
Walker,
right.
That's
one of my CIAA girls.
I am. How are you?
I am wonderful, and like Monique, I'm just so proud of you, of where you're at with your life and your what you're doing for, and you're giving back. Now, here's truly an example of each one, reach one. She is giving back.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, and it's all because of you and so many others that reached back and pulled me along. And so I wanted to say thank you to both you and to Monique. But my question, and actually asking you to really speak to the point that someone is always watching. And, you know, I'm a true believer that you need to act and dress for the position that you want, for where you're trying to go and not for where you currently are. Can you reiterate the importance of, you know, your actions and someone is always watching regardless as to if you realize it or not?
Tanya, thank you so much because that is so true, and I really try to emphasize that, not just to the women but to our young men. You know, obviously my son's in the business, and one of the things that I'm very proud of, I've never seen him not dress appropriately for whatever situation he was in. And that comes from, that's how he was raised, and that's what I taught him. And plus, he likes looking nice, too. So, but anyway, yes, it is important. Young ladies, you know, you've got to remember when you're dressing. My mother used to always say, when you look in the mirror, are you comfortable with what your reflection is showing so that you will not be an embarrassment to yourself and to the people that you are representing? And if you can say yes, your skirt or your dress is at the right length, it's not too tight, your breasts are not falling out, your makeup's not too heavy, you know, you don't have 1,001 tattoos showing on your body where people can see them, then you're ready to go out. I've had to actually, probably in my entire career, actually approach some young women and just sit them down and be more of a mother to them and say, look, here's the talk that's going around in our network about you, and it's based upon how you dress. So you've got a reputation that you have probably earned because of your attire, but I know personally you are not that person, so we need to clean that up. And the person said, well, I didn't know. I said, that's why I'm telling you. So I'm a proponent that you dress appropriately, with whether it's a suit, skirt, slacks. Everybody doesn't have to be in heels. If you're more comfortable in flats, that's great. But make sure that you're always properly attired so that you're never an embarrassment. Because remember, you're not only representing yourself, you're representing your family, you're representing that institution that you work for, and you're representing women, especially minority women. Because you know, people tend to grade everybody by what somebody else is doing. If Tanya Walker is wearing micro minis and her breasts hanging out, then that's typical minority women. Mm. Yeah, look at them. You know, so we have got to do a better job of being open and honest with each other too, because then I'm at fault if I don't tell Tanya when I see her, you may want to rethink the attire you have on. And sometimes people will take it and say thank you, and there'll be some people that will say, who do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you just have to roll with that, because not everybody's going to believe or do, but they will see eventually, well, why am I not getting interviewed? Why am I not on a committee? Why am I not representing my conference? Why am I not representing the university? So those things will come back. And for our young men, same thing. It's okay to put a tie on, guys. It's okay to put a suit on. You know, I think we've become sort of this casual dress society where on campus, coaches, all they wear are sweat clothes. I used to have a rule when I was at Virginia State. The only time I wanted to see you in a sweatsuit was when you were going to practice. Now, I didn't tell women they had to wear heels. I didn't tell my men they had to have coat and tie on. But they knew that they had to be dressed appropriately, because they never knew, one, when the president would want to see them, when I would want to see them, or I would have a guest that I'd want to introduce them to. So you've always got to be prepared. I tell the young people that I work with, when I get dressed in the morning, I make sure that I'm dressed so that if John LeCrone walks in my office and says, Frieda, I need you to go to a meeting, I'm not saying, oh, my God, I'm here in jeans and a T-shirt. So we have got to be aware of our surroundings, and we, as those in leadership positions, we need to reiterate that with our young people, because they do come from a society or a generation where casual is the thing to do.
Right.
It's okay to put a jacket on with a jeans and call ourselves dressed for the occasion.
Thank you, Frieda.
Tanya's right. We have got to do that.
Well, thanks, Tanya, for that question. And thanks, Frieda, for that answer. If you just join us, we have Frieda Goff, the Senior Associate Commissioner for the Horizon League. And we are talking currently right now of how to represent yourself and others in the business here on the Chat in the Garden on Survivor Radio Network. We are going to take a short break here. And when we return, we will continue talking to the magnificent mentor, Frieda Goff.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Pick up your copy of Running with Blinders, the top 17 mistakes of small businesses, written by author Brian Joubert, who has over 20 years of experience in business consulting. Running with Blinders is a full resource guide that will motivate, educate, and inspire everyone who reads this book. filled with expert advice to avoid pitfalls, this book is a must-have for everyone who really wants to be successful. On sale now for only $12.95. Visit lbtaxservice.com. Purchase your copy of Running with Blinders, the Top 17 Mistakes of Small Businesses, and get started creating long-term business success.
You feel petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments, not knowing what to do. You do nothing. But if you do something, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about your options. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
More and more people are making their purchases online, and their number one resource is ShopSquare.com. At ShopSquare.com, they're committed to excellence and top-notch customer service. ShopSquare.com is empowering customers just like you by providing them with the best details online anytime. If you're looking for electronics, home decor, home appliances, sporting equipment, college wear, or fashion, ShopSquare.com is where you'll want to be. Go to www.shopsquare.com or give us a call at 877-659-0807. That's 877-659-0807.
SRN Survival Radio Network.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Monique A.J. Smith, and welcome to A Chat in the Garden where Sniffins Blooms here on Survival Radio Network. And we have Afrida Golf. This month, we are incorporating the growth segment sponsored by faithconnection.org. And we are encouraging our listeners to reflect in order to elevate to their next leadership step. That being said, Afrida, what would you describe as a time when your career that you would call your season of growth?
I would probably say when I actually became the athletics director at Virginia State. My entire career had been at a predominantly white institution. I went to Slippery Rock and Penn State, worked at Pitt, and worked at Virginia Commonwealth. But it wasn't until I came to an HBCU. I knew about HBCUs, but had never experienced an HBCU. Mm-hmm. And I realized that when I got to Virginia State, that was when I hit the growth period of my career, mm-hmm. because I had so many more challenges facing me than I did when I was working at a VCU or University of Pittsburgh. And you know what? I embraced those challenges. Were they frustrating? Sure they were. But I embraced them because of the people I got to work with, my coaches, my administrators, the administrative staff with President Moore, the community that I was in, because I had never really lived or worked in a community that was predominantly minority. So it was a change for me and a challenge, and it also forced me to come out and do some things. And I saw myself grow as a person. I really did. So my hat's off, you know, working with Commissioner Carey at the CIAA. And it was different, challenging, fun, and I loved all 4 years that I had the opportunity to work at an HBCU.
Now, the one thing that I would say, because being in the business for 24 years, only half of what you have done, usually when those who come from not HBCUs and they come, you can see the discomfort. Mm-hmm. I never saw the discomfort when it came to you. I mean, sitting in, and ironically, we were both athletic directors together. And so mm-hmm. by me watching you and how you maneuvered, not maneuvered, you were just being yourself, but you got the buy-in. I mean, even when you knew more because you exposed to more, you didn't let the others feel as if, let me show you how. Mm-hmm. It was like, we're going to take this walk together. Have you ever thought about it? It was just amazing to me. And it showed me how to earn the respect of those who may not have come down the path that I have. And so I just you're just amazing to me how you did that.
Well, I think part of it was because I was also learning. So I've always said you can't learn if you're not open to others. You've got to listen to others, and you've got to be able to take criticism, and you've got to be able to give constructive criticism in a specific manner. So that's why I think that journey was fun for me and challenging. And today, when I see any of those ADs, that like Ed, he's, you know, I think he's the, he and George, because, well, George wasn't an AD when I was there. George came on after I came. So Ed's the only one who's still in an AD's position from when I was there from 94 to 98. And we sit and talk and we laugh about those same things, you know, how, you know, things could have gone south on me real easy, because before you joined or before you were appointed the AD, I was the only female sitting in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, they're all already skeptical because I'm a female, and two, I didn't come from an HBCU.
Right.
So I had to win their trust also, and I think that's important. That, you know, yeah, I know a lot of things. I've experienced a lot of things. But you know what? I'm not any better or any worse than you are. We're going to work on this together. We're going to make the CIAA better together. You're going to help me make Virginia State better. And when our program started to rise, the ADs were very kind, because now my teams are starting to beat their teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, wow, how'd you do that? You know, they wanted to learn. What did you do different than what they'd been doing before you got there? So those kinds of things. So I felt like we were like family.
Right.
And we worked together as family, and we didn't tear each other down. That to me was most important.
Well, and I'm really excited about all these questions that are coming in. I know it wasn't me. It was because I put your name out there. Frida's going to be here. But Rosemary Tribling, Academic and Life Skills Coordinator at University of Wyoming, had a very similar question that I just posed about seasonal growth, and she wants to know, concerning overcoming challenges and ways to stay motivated as you are facing adversity. So how do you stay motivated?
Well, first of all, you got to keep your spiritual faith first and foremost. Because I truly believe I'm not any better than anybody else. But God has given me some skills. He's given me situations. He has challenged me to be the best that I can be. So every day I come to work knowing there's going to be good days, there's going to be bad days. But our good days are going to outweigh our bad days. And you know what? Not be ashamed or afraid to say, I don't know, or I can't do this. I need help. There have been some challenges that, you know, I wanted to throw up my hands, but I said, you know what, if I throw up my hands and if I give in, then what lesson am I sending or teaching to the young people that I'm with? Now, have I had incidents where I didn't agree with my boss? Yes. Have I had incidents where I've had people try to undermine me? Yes. But you know what? You rise above that. You do not get caught in that. And sometimes it's really difficult because you're human. Your feelings get hurt. And do you cry?
Right.
Yes. But you just, as my mom would say, suck it up. Don't let them see you cry. And you move forward. And you take from those challenges and those negative experiences something that will make you better down the road.
Yes.
There's not an experience that you haven't gone through that hasn't made you better for the next phase of your life. And so that's how I, through 40 years of being in college athletics, because something as simple as, you know what, my kid was supposed to win that national championship, and she came in second. And I had to deal with her disappointment Teams disappointment. How do you manage that? I've had to deal with calling a student into my office and saying, your mother died this morning. We need to get
Lord.
You home.
Ooh, Lord.
I've had the challenge of knowing one of my student athletes at VCU dropped dead at a basketball practice. It's not always been a bed of roses. So you have challenges, but you take those challenges and you learn from them, and they do make you better, and they prepare you for the next challenge that you're going to have in your life. If you don't have challenges, then you're not doing something right.
This is true. Now, the one thing that you say that I hold close to is if you're a leader, you know somebody's watching you. So if
exactly.
that could ever be a motivating factor, you do it so they can show them how to get through it.
Exactly.
And so, well, you know, we only got 10 minutes, and I got so many things to cover. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I do want to talk about a little bit of the balance a little bit. You and Sharon Beverly, the AD at College of New Jersey, have something in common. Both have sons mm-hmm. in the business as athletic directors. Athletics is out a lot from my family. What do you think that you showed your son that made him want to jump back into the business?
To be honest with you, he was just like his mother. This is not his career path. Anton actually wanted to be a lawyer.
Oh.
And he got waitlisted at the University of William & Mary. And being a very impatient young man, he goes, I'm not waiting. I'm not putting my education on hold. So he went back to VCU and got his master's.
Okay.
And then he went to work for the governor, and then he worked for the city for mm-hmm. a couple of years. And then one of his mentors at VCU said, Anton, have you ever thought about getting your PhD? And he goes, hadn't really thought about it, but it would be something I'd consider. Well, he got recommended to attend Kent State's PhD program in administration of higher ed.
Hmm.
So his goal was to get the PhD and to work on a college campus, but on the administrative side. Because I had asked him, would you ever consider being a coach? He goes, oh, no, Mom, I have no desire to be a coach, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he gets to Kent State. He is in the School of Ed, and you get a stipend as a grad student, as a TA, and his advisor was the faculty athletics rep. And for those of you who are in athletics, you know the faculty athletics rep is the liaison between the president and the athletic department.
Mm-hmm.
And the faculty athletic rep, in hearing his background and his career as a student athlete and what he did in high school and all that, he goes, well, they're looking for a graduate assistant in the athletics department in their academic services, and it pays $200 more a month than what the School of Ed pays.
Mm-hmm.
Well, having just given up a full-time job, that $200 looked pretty good. So
mm-hmm.
he went over, interviewed with the athletics director, Lang Kennedy, who hired him on the spot, and that's how Anton got into the athletics. And the longer he was in it, the more he said, you know what, I think I want to be an AD.
Mm-hmm.
And he got his first opportunity. Like his mother, he had come through a predominantly white institution of learning, Bowling Green, VCU, Kent State. And his first AD opportunity was where? CIAA.
Mm-hmm.
Bowie State. So he is mirroring what his mother did, but it, like his mom, was not the career path he chose. But he's very, very happy being an athletics director, and he was given the opportunity to become the athletics director at the University of Hartford this past May. So he was very grateful for his HBCU experience, and that has allowed him, believe it or not, to break that mold, because you know they say you can't move from HBCU to predominantly white institutions to the AD seat. And he not only broke the mold, he totally shattered it, because he did it coming from a Division II HBCU.
Right.
So
right.
It's all in your preparation. It's all in your preparation.
All
in being
your preparation.
Ready when the opportunity comes your way.
Well, I have one more question from my listeners. Tanya Sharlin from Assistant Commissioner at the Great Lakes Valley Conference. She has three great questions, okay? So
she's down the hall. She could have come up.
Well, did I say her last name correctly?
Yes.
Okay. The first question is, developing a key network, who should be in that circle? Give me short answers now, Frieda.
Yeah. Should be someone in the business and some people outside of the business.
Okay. Recap that. Developing key network should be people inside the business and outside the business. Second
mm-hmm.
question. Best piece of advice you were given?
Be true to yourself.
Okay, be
Never
true.
Give up your values.
Yeah, that's true. And thirdly, when and how did you receive advice that was inappropriate?
Wow, I'd probably have to go back. And it was when I was being interviewed, and the reporter looked at me like I had three heads and said, there is no way you will ever be an athletics director. You have two strikes against you. You're a minority, and you're a woman. And I looked at him and said, I will prove you wrong one day.
Do you remember who that reporter? Don't tell me a name, but do you remember who the reporter is?
He has long since left this earth. And he was with the major Pittsburgh paper at the time.
Well, I hope you clipped out an article when you got named AD at Virginia State.
I did, and I sent it to him. And you know what? He was a gentleman and said, congratulations, happy to see that you have reached your career goal.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I'm just grinning. Now, I just want to see if I can get some more things in. There is one I did. Okay. So you are the founder of the Women's Symposium that is administered by NACWA now. Tell us about your brainchild that has grown to reach thousands.
It started with, at the time, we had four presidents that were female in our league, and they felt that women were not developing in our league. We were
mm-hmm.
not doing what we need to do to develop women. And Claire Van Emmerson, for which we named the Women Leadership Award after, said to John LaCrone, the commissioner, we need to do something to help women in the Horizon League. So John said, I hear you. And he came home from a meeting and said, Frieda, I have a project for you. And he told me what the presidents wanted was some type of leadership programming for the women in the Horizon League. So I just took that directive, and I ran with it and gave it my best effort. And over the years, I have been able to grow that because I've expanded it with Bonnie Teal from Tiffin University when we were co-directors, when we were just doing it every other year, to
mm-hmm.
where we passed the torch over to NACWA and the NCAA. And Patty Phillips and her staff, and they are just doing an outstanding job. And it really, really, people say, you want to leave a legacy. I said, if I have a legacy, that would be it, where we've been able to reach thousands of young women, help them get started and continue in a career of intercollegiate athletics.
And what a legacy it is. I want to say thank you so much, Frieda, for taking the time out. To talk with us this morning. Frieda has announced her retirement, and we know that doesn't really mean anything because you know she's still going to be impacting lives.
You're right. I'm transitioning to another phase, I like to tell people, and the phase is more family time, more time for the things I have passion for, which is developing young women.
Mm-hmm.
And also I will be doing consulting work with Betsy Alden and Associates. So really not retiring, just moving over to something different.
Well, congratulations, Frieda. And I can't even conclude my thoughts. I'm just so excited that others will be able to hear this broadcast over and over again and be able to, as my country way of saying it, gnaw on it a little bit and take it all in and digest it.
Well, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure. Always, anytime I get to spend with you is great time.
Thank you. Thank you. And to our listeners, as always, like to wish Clark Garrison and Survivor Radio Network for having me join the network family, and to the brand definer, Nikki Curry, for identifying this great opportunity. Please join me next week when we will begin our New York State of Mind. That's what I call it. And I'm so excited about the fact that we will have Krista Duss from Hofstra Community College. She's the athletic director there. So join me next Tuesday, January 13th at 11:30 Eastern Time. And to catch all of our updates and guest podcasts, go to Facebook's Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith. And have a significant rest of the day. I'm taking my freedom, pulling it off.